Hey guys, I'm here to tell you about Strange Brew Lounge Side in Austin, Texas. They won Best Acoustic Venue, Best All Ages Venue, and Best Overall Venue in the Austin Chronicle Music Poll 2013-2014. They've got a lot of great shows there. Weekly shows Tuesday, The Apostles of Manchaca and Darawa. Wednesdays, Renfro and Chris Gage. October 8th, they have Ian Moore. October 18th, the great Jimmy LaFave, who was just recently on the show. October 23rd, from Nashville, Melissa Greener with special guest Bonnie Whitmore. Now get out there and find out why Strange Brew won Best Venue. Get out there. Check out StrangeBrewLoungeSide.com.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. Special Wednesday release. We're having three shows this week coming out because I could not release the show on Friday. I will tell you all about that in just a minute. Let me tell you, I've got a great show for you today. From 333, my good friend Mr. Tony Park is here today, and we are talking, and he used to meet a band called Push Monkey. You might know them. They were on Arista. Had a big run in the 90s and early 2000s, and great band. I was friends with them for a long time. Before that, they were called Mad Hatter. That's when I met him, like probably 92 or something is when I started seeing them. 1990, that's a long time ago, man. That's fucking 22 years ago. Anyway, Tony and I have known each other for a very long time. He helped my band out. I will get all to all of that in just a minute. But he's got a new band called 333. They're fantastic. You can find them at 333music.com. That's three spelled out and then two threes, music.com. Okay? Great band. They just put out a new record called The Things That Break. It's fantastic. They're a great band, and you'll get to that conversation in just a minute. Let me tell you what's going on with me. First of all, this is coming out automatically because I am on my way to Scottsdale, Arizona to play a show with Skyrocket. And then tomorrow, we are flying to Houston to play a show there, too. These are two private shows, two fundraisers for things, and I have no idea what's going on. I do know that I don't have to dress up very much. So I do know that, and that's what's happening. The reason why there are three shows coming out this week, though, is because, man, I tried to upload the show on Thursday night that came out on Friday, the John Bush show, last episode. Did not come out. It would time out. It wouldn't upload. And I'm like, God, what the hell is going on? Maybe something's wrong with the Podbean site. So I go to sleep, wake up the next morning, try to upload it. Something's going wrong. So I write them and I go, hey, guys, because I normally don't have any problem uploading it unless they have a problem. Okay. Unless Podbean's having some uploading issues, then I'll write them an email. Pretty much within the hour, they will write me back and be like, hey, sorry, we fixed it. Or hey, we're going to be broken till 10 or something, whatever. They fill me in. This time the guy wrote me back. He said, hey, you got no uploading issues here. Everything's fine. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. So I kept trying to upload. But at the same time on Friday, I had a gig that night. I hadn't slept very much the night before. I really needed a nap because the next day I had a really long day traveling and everything and going to another show out of town and then coming back that same night, not getting home until like 3 or 4 in the morning. So I was kind of out of it. But then at the same time, my cousins were coming into town with couches, one for me and one for my cousin Emily. So I had to move these couches, had to watch my cousin Elena. So I'm missing out on kind of this uploading thing. And I go to the office to try and upload it. It won't upload there. So now I'm a little bit concerned. Something might be wrong with my computer. I call Time Warner. I go, hey, man, look, what's going on? And there's nothing wrong with you, but run this test. And so I run a speed test on my computer. Is this interesting or is this driving you guys nuts? Either way, what ends up happening is it's my Wi-Fi. And for some reason, Time Warner has never acknowledged my Wi-Fi. Now, I've lived in this apartment for 3 years. They set up the stuff here. It's all worked until Thursday when I was trying to upload. And now I can't. I mean, it takes me literally now 3 minutes to upload a picture to Facebook. So to upload one of these shows that's like over an hour long takes forever and it times out. So I'm getting all that fixed and I'm uploading these at a coffee shop down the street called Buzzmill. That's fantastic. I don't know if you guys live in Austin. You should go there. They have music. They have food trailers. They have a full bar. And they have great coffee. And I think they're open 24 hours. So that's great. Ah, coffee. It's great, isn't it? Anyway, as I said, I'm on my way to Scottsdale to play a show with Skyrocket. And then tomorrow, Thursday, flying to Houston to play a show, then coming back Friday afternoon to Austin. And then Saturday, we will be playing at the 1-to-1 bar if you want to come out and see us play. It should be fantastic. All right, let me tell you about my guest today, Tony Park. He has a band called 333. As I said, they just put out their second record, The Things That Break. Their first record, The Ugly Side of True, came out last year. They do a partnership with Rock Army Records, who handles our friend Joseph King's albums and such. Anyway, so they've got this great band, but I've known Tony for a long time. Like I said, I saw him play, I remember, at like a co-op party, like Pearl Street Co-op or 23rd Street Co-op here in West Campus in Austin. They used to have these great parties, and if you were underage, you could get in there and drink. So I went to a party, and I knew somebody from Access Television, this girl Dana. And we were kind of pals, and she had my band on her show. And then we stayed in touch. She said, hey, come out and see Mad Hatter at this co-op party. Saw them, and I loved them. And then ended up, they turned into a band called Push Monkey, and we used to do shows at Steamboat, and then they got signed to Arista, and then we got signed to Elektra, and they came, they took us on tour with them. I remember they put me on the guest list when they toured opening for Kiss. Me and my friend Einar and my friend Danny Crooks and Sean Crooks all went to the show. It was fantastic. We had backstage passes, the whole shebang, watching Push Monkey play at like the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. That was fantastic, man. Amazing seeing your friends do that. I remember that show like it was yesterday. I was very proud of my friends. And then they got signed. They did a record with Mike Klink, the guy that produced Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses. That was very exciting. And then when their record came out, they took my band, Gowdy, out on tour with them, opening for them throughout the region. I remember going out with them for a couple weeks and doing shows, and it was great. We had a great time with them. But the interesting thing is, while I was very good friends with Will Hoffman from Push Monkey, and we used to hang out outside of the thing, we wrote songs together, we used to, you know, hang out outside of the clubs during the day, he'd come over to my house, we would go do some shit together, go have lunch or go have coffee or whatever. I never really had that with Tony, like we never hung out. He was always very, very nice, but he was always very shy, very quiet. And this was like the first time I ever really got to talk to him for a length of time. And man, we really hit it off. Vowed to stay in touch. Gonna try and go have dinner. He came and saw Skyrocket that night, and we ended up hanging out. Man, he's just a fucking great guy. Such a sweet guy. So much focus, and we cover a lot of things, man. Getting older in the business, as the music changes, how do you handle that? How do you handle the business changing? Everything's different from when we were younger and going for it, when I was in Gowdy and he was in Push Monkey and we were doing our thing or playing at the Steamboat. You know, great times. But the business has changed and music has changed, and you still want to stay relevant and you still want to be good and make music that makes people lift an eyebrow and say, wow, that's good music. Make music that connects with people still. That's a tough thing to do. I mean, you get older and you've done this for a long time, and while you might get better at it and better at it, there, you know, things are changing constantly. Sounds are changing. What people are interested in is changing. It's harder to get people out. We talk about this on the show all the time. So Tony and I have this great conversation. His band 333 put out a record last year called The Ugly Side of True, which I said 2013. It was a very alternative rock record. And he talked about getting together for The Things That Break and kind of, you know, modernizing the sound. Not to placate, but to stay relevant. Great conversation with Tony Park. Great guy. Real interesting stuff. How he and his brother split apart when they were young, and it turns out they did the same thing when they got older. Great. This is an amazing story. Sit down, listen to my conversation with the great Tony Park from the band 333, and enjoy it. All right? Let's get down.
Push me to the limit, I'm on the brink of a breakdown.
Wow. What are they?
About to be 6 and 11.
Yeah. Hey, do you know what Slender Man is?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I found out about it last night watching 2020. I shouldn't watch those shows, but Yeah, it's a weird thing that only kids know about. But now
what,
I feel
Slender
like
Man, like kids like five
it's like
year
a
olds?
Boogeyman. It's like this really. There's a couple of good pictures, but there's like these pictures from like the past, and there's this superimposed like giant, tall, skinny, faceless, freaky.
It was like pitch
being
black
in a suit.
It's probably like Pitch Black from. Yeah, I'm all about the big Disney movies.
Yeah, it's not Disney, man. Yeah. It's like underground it's internet stuff. Yeah, that only kids know about, and it's like a boogeyman esque thing.
So, somebody done the song about it?
No, but there was a murder where two young girls murdered another girl. I'm just laughing at the fact that
it's like urban legend.
That's what
it all is.
It's like urban legend. They were trying to impress him. And it was just weird. They didn't murder any, they tried to attempt, but that was their goal. And it was like, how, you know, what's going on with the kids these days in this Slender Man.
See, I love to deep research stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, my ADHD kicks in and it only lasts about a day or two. But for that day or two, man, I dive deep. So I'm going to go check that out.
You've always seemed like a really calm guy to me.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always thought you were real calm.
What people always tell me is that you're different on stage.
Oh, yeah.
Than you are like, in person. Yeah. You're as like chill and easygoing. And when we met you on stage, we thought we would be scared of you.
Yeah.
I'm so not scary.
Yeah, you know, today I was listening to stuff, and I was thinking about when you guys were so cool. Like I loved the relationship that we had with you guys, Gowdy and Push Monkey, and whatever. I was telling Zuri, I saw you guys at like the 24th Street Co-op, Mad Hatter, like in 1991 or 1992.
Were you Panjandrum back then?
No, it was in between Panjandrum and Mr. Rocket Baby.
That's it.
Wow. Yeah, but I went with the guy, with the bass player from Mr. Rocket Baby to that party to see you guys because of, God, I'm drawing a blank on her name, but I love her. She was on Cable Access.
Dana.
Dana.
Yeah.
Dana had said, you got to come see these guys.
Mm-hmm. And she actually still comes to our shows to this day.
I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've seen some of the videos that Dave did of you guys that are great. I watched a Balcony TV thing, which was interesting to me because your band is super rock, 333.
Well, so we had some change over the last probably, you know, the band is about 3 years old. For the first 2 years, we had the lead guitar, lead singer from Free Bleeder, John Milliken, in the band. Great writer, great talent. And then Chris Foster, producer and bass player for Free Bleeder, also great writer, great talent. And, you know, we kind of got to a creative differences place where we thought, you know, frankly, rock music nowadays is a little limited, right? The market has grown a little bit past it, and it's great. We still, 333 loves to rock out, right? But the stuff that was happening in the 90s, the grunge kind of influenced other than Dave Grohl staying kind of modern, most of that music's a little yesterday now. I mean, it just kind of is. And so when you love a music like that, rock music, and, you know, really just kicking butt on stage, but it becomes a little dated, you know, how do you refresh it? And so 333 decided, well, you know, let's add some keyboards, a little more production, you know, get those vocals up and go a little bit more, just a little more modern, more like how Pink went from pop towards
rock,
more of a rock.
Yeah.
Right. Would it be cool to take rock and go a little more into that pop?
Yeah.
A little more, you know, not sell out mainstream.
No,
but in
you've
a way,
always, you've,
sell
always
out mainstream.
A, you've always had a, you've always had a pop sensibility to your writing.
Totally. Feel
it's
that
not
way.
Like unlistenable.
Yeah,
you know
I'm all
I mean?
About hooks.
Yeah.
I love,
yeah,
you know, to connect instantly to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, a crowd's like, yeah, bro, and they sing your stuff right back to you. You're like, that worked.
Yeah.
Let's keep that one.
Yeah.
You know, because
definitely
it connected instantly.
Yeah. So that's then, so you guys switched out some guys then.
We did. We added a producer, keyboard player, John Orr Franklin.
And he produced the record as well?
He did. Yeah, he did.
That's cool to have that because you can, you know, I don't know, helps have that kind of mind in the band.
Yeah, it's funny too because sometimes, if anything, he struggles in the writing part to not be a producer.
Right.
Like sometimes when you're writing, you just need to kind of fluidly bring it out. You know, I mean, you're
right.
A writer for years. You know the process. You just have to sort of go with it.
Right.
Right, and be in the moment. And he and I have talks all the time about, be in the moment.
Yeah.
And he said, but we have to plan this and figure this out. And I got this part I worked up. Just be in the moment.
Yeah.
Don't be a producer right now. Be a writer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, yeah, that's good.
And he can.
Yeah.
And it's great. And when he does, it's, man, he does such fabulous work.
Yeah.
It's neat. Neat.
Well, the record sounds incredible. Where did you, does he have a studio or did you guys do it somewhere?
Well, so the new, the first record he did.
Okay.
The second record, The Things That Break, the new release.
Yes.
Is half done by Paul Sorosky.
Yeah.
Podunk fame. American
Rock
Sons,
Army Records.
Rock Army Records, yeah. All that.
And did they put this record out, Things That Break?
Yeah, it's funny. Kinda.
Yeah.
But we're not technically signed. We just, we're collaborating.
Okay. I think that's cool. I mean, in this day and age, like, you know, unless someone can give you like $200 million or right. $100,000, sorry.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Right.
Okay, so go ahead. So you got John, John Orr Franklin.
Yeah, so John, so Paul did right. the more electronic full band mixes, you know,
okay.
guitars and, you know, 80 track kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then John did the, what we're calling the eco mixes. And we actually calling them eco because we were looking for a different way. We didn't want to say unplugged.
Right.
Because that
right.
has the connotation of, you know, Nirvana unplugged. And
right, right.
Right. Everybody goes, oh, well, it's just acoustic guitars and singing.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of times they go, that's not that good. Well, this isn't unplugged, right? This isn't pared down. It's a revamp in a more classic, orchestral, more beautiful,
right,
sonically,
yeah,
approach versus aggressive, heavy hitting. This is just more, wow, interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Like you could listen to it in the dark at night and chill.
Yeah.
And go, oh, I get where he's coming. You could feel it.
Yeah.
It allowed me to sing, actually. Usually I have to yell a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's great. I actually get to sing.
Yeah.
And so we didn't want to call them unplugged. We didn't want to call them, you know, acoustic mixes because there are tons of keyboards and electronic violins and things
right.
like that on the tracks. So they're not acoustic. So right. let's come up with a new thing. And so we came up with eco.
Okay. I think that that's a cool thing.
Yeah. And we're hoping maybe other people will start doing these kind of mixes.
Yeah.
They're like half orchestral, half acoustic. You call them ecos. And so
how,
to help spread the eco word.
Yeah. Yeah, get it out there.
Coin the phrase.
Make it a new, bring a new term to the biz. It needs new terms.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting that you say the thing about the rock and trying to stay relevant because it feels like to me and all the people that I talk to in these situations that rock is kind of becoming like a specialty style in the way that like when we were kids, jazz was.
In a way.
You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
There's a rock station and it kind of like, there isn't a lot of new rock
right.
happening at all.
Right.
And the bands that are like, even like, I mean, there's a, I guess, because there's so many avenues that people can do, you know what I mean? Like they can be, like, it seems like metal has had a resurgence because you can find anything you want. So whatever you're into, you can totally immerse yourself in it
right.
now in the age of the internet. So these people can have like specialty ideas of what they like and what they don't. I mean, I don't even know really what I'm trying to formulate as a question, but do you, was that, you wanted to be relevant?
Yeah.
You didn't want to be dinosaur-esque out there, kind of like,
yeah.
Hey, why doesn't anyone like what I used to do 15 years ago, which I think is super important.
Well, it's funny, Johnny, because when you look at the landscape of radio, which is kind of struggling, right, with the internet,
yeah.
it's a different world now. Right. The generation of music media, I'm trying to say this well, but it used to be you put on the station that you liked.
Yeah.
And it would play varieties of style in that style. Like, you know,
right.
I could listen to KLBJ, for example, and hear some classic rock, some new rock, some medium rock, but, you know, some cool, you know, things from Nirvana to Skynyrd, anything
right.
in that zone.
Yeah.
And that was relatively relevant.
At the
10
time.
Or 15,
yeah.
20 years ago.
Yeah.
Radios do that. That's what radio stations do. They sort of pick a style and stay there.
Yeah.
But the new generation is iPod generation.
Yeah.
Right? And when you have your iPod, you might have freaking Miles Davis and Slayer.
Yeah.
On your list, on your
yeah.
playlist. And you might shuffle, right? So you're like,
yeah.
next song, and then you get something cool.
It's like the Bob kind
it's
of station,
much more like
that.
Bob. It
or
is.
Jax or whatever they
yeah,
are all over the
but
country.
Even crazier with
yeah.
your own personal flavors
yeah.
that you like.
Yeah.
Right? So now it becomes, well, golly, how do you connect to, like, how do you sell a record or release an album of 10 songs, right, and reach that level of diversity? Anymore, it's actually gotten, I think we've gone all the way back to the beginning of recorded music with singles. Elvis released singles. We all used to release singles.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Now it's all about the single again, sure. Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
You think about it, you know, people, oh, you just can't do more than one song. Well, when we started this business, it was about one song.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
That's what put everybody on the map.
Yeah.
One song and then standards, covers.
Right.
Is the new version of what standards used to be. So yeah. We really have just come full circle back to the way it began.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of times people complain about it. I'm like, you can complain about what's happened with the industry, but it actually just returned to the beginning.
Yeah.
What did they do?
Yeah.
What did they do? They released different styles. They released different angles on standards. They played covers.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It was about the person, the personality. It was about Elvis.
Yeah.
It wasn't about the cool band scene. It was about Elvis.
Right.
So with 333, what we've decided, in a way, in that perspective is, well, let's focus on who we are as people. So that's why, like, Ben's got the sharks.
Yeah.
That he's always, you know, passing out sharks to people because he's into the sharks. He likes to go to New Orleans and have fun.
Yeah.
You know, Nathan is a guitar player, and he's from New York, and he's cool.
Yeah.
Right? So we always do breakfast with Nathan.
Yeah.
I saw that's personal.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's Nathan. It's what he's all about.
Yeah. That's a lot of what I did with, I mean, what I thought would work with this show is that I feel like at this point, if you can connect with somebody personally, you might be more apt to get into what they're doing musically.
Totally. And so we've just kind of realized that that's kind of what the industry is going towards is, and it's great because if you have a cool personality.
Yeah. If you're creative and you don't mind doing that. So there are people I've seen that it's like a huge pain in the ass to Instagram or tweet or something. And it's like, really? I mean, because it's just, you know. And I'm very happy, and you know, I'm glad that you're making music. I know that you took a break.
I did.
But I'm glad that you are embracing it as an open-minded person, because I think there's a lot of people that we came up with that are like, I wanted to go back to how it was, and exactly. Like, you can't do that.
Nothing.
No matter how much you want it to go back, you just got to kind of adapt.
That's exactly right. Adapt and overcome. It's a philosophy I've had for years.
Yeah.
Adapt and overcome.
Yeah. And so, like, so when you went to go make this new album, half Sorosky, half with John Orr Franklin, did you record at Sorosky's studio?
Did we have a studio? We did four.
There.
At Paul's studio.
Okay.
And then we did four.
At
We actually passed a lot of the stuff around, because we all have our own digital audio workstations.
Right.
And nowadays, you can do that.
Right.
It sounds good. You know, we have different programs. I'm a Pro Tools guy, and we've got a Nuendo guy, and we've got Cubase guy, but we can all pass our stuff around.
And it still works together.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then ultimately John would bring all the tracks in and then do the final mixing and put his producer hat on.
Yeah. And does he have a good, room there for mixing and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a tough thing. Do you have good ears for that?
It's funny. I'm a tweaker. I have mixed. I don't think I'm the best mixer by any means.
Yeah.
Overall, but I'm really good at a single tone. Like, I can make a vocal tone sound amazing,
right?
That one tone. But putting it all together in a pile.
Yeah, it's hard, man.
I can cook a dish. I can't cook a meal.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
John R. Franklin can cook a meal.
Is that how you approach it, music, too? Because I remember watching Push Monkey work on songs, even, like, at Steamboat before.
Oh, back when we used to rehearsal. Yeah. We used to rehearse in the... Danny let us... That was so cool of him. Such a great supporter of bands.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing this Mr. Rocket Baby show for him. So I hope he's happy.
Yeah, I've been trying to get Push Monkey to pull together. We got 333 to do the reunion show this past year.
And
do Push Monkey songs. We did about four.
That's cool.
Push Monkey songs. And
where is it? I mean, I used to see Will every Wednesday because he had a studio at a place where I rehearsed. Mm-hmm. But then I moved out of there and I don't see him anymore.
Well, he's having a lot of success with Nothing More. I think they had a single... top the charts maybe a month ago. I don't know how it's doing as of this month, you know, this week or anything. But I know they were doing really well. They're touring, you know, they're competing.
Wait, he's playing
with,
in
you
them?
Know, the Godsmacks and the Kid Rocks and all the, you know, relevant.
Is he playing?
No,
he's producer.
He's a manager. Producer,
a manager. Okay, okay.
Manager producer
right.
for them.
Okay. Yeah, because I knew he went into the business. Was he kind of the business dude?
Between him and the bass player, Pat.
Yeah, Pat.
Pat Fogarty. You know, Will was always kind of more of the visionary business guy.
Yeah.
Really good at kind of coming up with, you know, hey, guys, we need to probably look at this and change directions here. And wow, okay. Sometimes it was hard to swallow. Should we go that way? But he was often right. You know, that's kind of his manager hat. He's really a manager.
Yeah, he's a smart guy.
Very. Very savvy, very business savvy. And it got to the point where, you know, really it became evident along the way that we, you know, kind of trust Will's business sense.
Sure.
He had a really just an uncanny sense for things like that, for business and when to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember having some long talks with him during the time when you guys were on Arista and we were on that Lars label, just kind of talking about that kind of stuff. And he was always very interested and gave good insight.
Very.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is the music a collaboration? Like, do you guys do it in a room, or does someone put together a jam and send it to you and you sing on it or something?
It's funny because music is so organic. You know, not that it can't have some formula, right? Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we try to set things up. At least I always push for this in every band I've ever even halfway played in or been a part of, right? And Push Monkey and 333 being the biggest project I've ever done for any length of time.
Right.
We always come from the philosophy from, you know, all members equal. Mm-hmm. Everyone's responsible for all writing. So publishing money, it's all five ways.
Right.
Perfect even split. You know, so what if one day I brought in an entire song with an acoustic everything and sang it, and then they worked out a quick bass part and a drum part, and all of a sudden that song became a song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get more royalties for that because I don't know what day the bass player might bring in an amazing bass line.
That inspires everything else that happens.
Yeah. So you just never know.
Yeah.
And what you don't want to do, and I've seen this happen with a lot of bands, when they have the different divisions of publishing and royalties, and the singer, well, I sing, so I get 50%. Screw that. You know, all of a sudden, the other guys don't want to contribute.
Yeah.
Because they're like, man, I don't have as much interest in this.
Right. And then you end up with like a what was that guy that played bass for The Who? John Entwistle. Like, you just end up with man, you got a tour and shit when you're like 65.
Right.
Because you can't, those other guys are living high on the hog because they wrote all the songs. And I've always thought that that's kind of sad.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you are, and I think in your case, you probably have projects where you have been the singer-songwriter, you know, like the Bob Schneider. I mean, I get that. That's my stuff.
But I mean, in Gaudi, we had a very interesting thing because we were very hip to publishing before anything really went down, and we already kind of knew how it all worked, and we knew the fair and unfair feeling of, well, I mean, had I not come up with that cool bass line, then maybe we wouldn't have gotten that cool bridge and all that kind of stuff. So what we had was a setup where if you were in the room when the song was being written, because we also all worked with outside people too.
Right, and that does complicate it.
That does complicate it. Because like our single had like six writers on it.
Right.
So that would be divided equally. And then if you did not actively write while the song was being created, then therefore you came in and you got a non-writer's share ownership of that song.
Sure.
For what you did.
Right, as part of the publishing.
Yeah, to me, that seemed like the fairest way. Because
no,
in other ways, there,
in a way, you didn't really write the song.
Right,
you're part of it in a way. You play it.
But the room thing, when everyone's there, you never know what weird thing the drummer might say ends up the thing that you would have never taken.
Totally,
it's like that butterfly effect. Had that not happened, then all this other stuff, we wouldn't have this conversation that ended up making the song like this.
Absolutely.
In the room thing is very important, but I think that it's also really important that if you're gonna be a band, and I mean, you gotta go into it splitting everything like that. But also, if you are a guy that is sort of quote unquote not super essential in the writing process, to still be there and be present and be throwing out ideas that would worth it. Like, you know, you got to pull your weight if you're going to get the cut.
Yeah.
My thing.
And so for me, from a sort of an interactive philosophy perspective, right, member of the band, if they're not pulling their weight, that now you replace them. But for the time they were there.
Yeah. Right? That was there.
You're
it was important.
Equal. Yeah. 1/80th member, whatever. If there's 50 guys in the band, 1/50th member, equal.
Right.
Because what I've seen kill bands, and I've seen a lot of bands for a lot of you have too. What kills them all the time is these kind of bullshit resentments, right? Like, oh man, how come he gets all the,
right?
How come he gets all the, you know what? Right. You got just as much. And what causes that, I'm a psychology guy.
Yeah.
But what causes that psychologically is the victimized aspect
sure.
of it.
Yeah.
I'm now a victim. You're screwing me. Well, nobody's screwing you. In fact, right. you are an equal. If you're not getting what you want, then you need to step up.
Yeah.
You yeah. own your part.
Yeah.
Period.
There is a lot. There is a lot of expectations sometimes from people that don't have the experience. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And I noticed that even with this Mr. Rocket Baby thing, the guy that played drums after the original guy is like, hey, man, you know, what about me in this reunion? And you're kind of like, you know, man, you got to realize that, like, we were already unhappy and right. breaking up when you came in, and we did a couple of tours, but you weren't there like for all the songs and the making the record and what defined the band. And I know that it's hurtful to say that to somebody, right. but it's extremely, I was being extremely honest
yeah.
and it's so touchy, isn't it? The whole psychology of doing
this. It's a big deal. Yeah. yeah.
And people that, you know, being a singer, a lot of times you get resentment instantly because of the level of importance that people put on you in the group.
It is a different dynamic.
But the thing that a lot of people don't sit down and think about is you're the fucking guy talking to them.
Right.
Like you're telling them mm-hmm. stuff in words, and they're connecting with you. They're connecting with the band as a group, yes, but the singer does have a different connection with the people because he's telling them stuff.
Right.
It doesn't make you more important. They're just like, you're speaking
you're the
their language.
You're the conduit.
Guy. Yeah.
You're actually the conduit.
Yeah.
That is true. And it's funny, too, because I've found in my years, it's whether or not I have a huge ego, I won't speak to that, but I'm always assumed to have one.
Of course.
It's always
assumed. If I didn't like, know you as a person, and I just saw you up there with the, you know, back in the time of Push Monkey or something, the bullhorn and like the whip microphone and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I would have thought like, yeah, that guy's some weird, yeah. like creepy S&M guy.
He's probably a prick, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, totally.
I'm so easygoing.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, of course, we all have our days, but.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was talking to Dwight Baker
mm-hmm.
About yeah. that just a couple of days ago, and he was like, you're completely different. And you are on stage, like
yeah.
you know. But that's what you do. You bring a guy. Certainly, my home life personality is not something that people should pay to have to watch on stage,
right?
You know what I mean,
right?
Like, you know, you got to be conscious of that thing. Let me ask you, where are you from?
Originally,
yeah,
I'm from Illinois.
Okay,
Bloomington Normal. I think that's ironic.
Wow,
but I grew up in Houston. I'm really a Houston kid.
Okay, yeah.
How did you get into music? You know, it's funny. Music, my mom even used to tell me when I was a kid, I used to sing songs, and I've always been very musical. And the other, you know, I think there is sort of an inherent or genetic component. My dad, my biological dad, used to play guitar all the time. My mom would say, yeah, he used to play all the time. And my biological brother, my half-brother, mm-hmm. is Chad Gray from Mudvayne.
Oh, wow.
And Hell Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he and I separated when I was 5.
Wow.
I moved to Texas and he stayed back there. So I hadn't seen him in like 30 years. And one day my mom goes, I think I got in touch with them and talked to their family and stuff. And I think Chad, your brother Chad, is like in a band. I'm like, oh, really? Well, that's cool. You know, it was, you know, kind of Push Monkey doing well. So, that's cool. I'm glad he's in a band too. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And then she was like, yeah, I think he's like the drummer for some Mudvayne. I'm like, Mudvayne? You mean Mudvayne? Is that, you mean
yeah.
Mudvayne? She's yeah. like, oh, maybe that was it. Because it's my mom. She's like,
yeah,
I don't
yeah,
know
yeah.
Mudvayne for mud anything. I'm like, well, Mudvayne's a pretty big band. I mean, they're touring like with Slipknot. And
yeah.
they were on The Matrix. I mean, really? Okay. Well, so I went and looked him up, you know, internet. And I'm looking at the drummer. The guy didn't look anything like me. It didn't look anything like I remember Chad. You know, of course, he was 5 yeah. when I last saw him. And so Man, I'm just not connecting with it. But I'm flipping through and I see a picture of the singer from Mudvayne. I'm like, well, now that guy looks like Chad. So I looked into the singer. Sure enough, Chad Gray is the singer for Mudvayne. We toured with tons of the same bands. We never played together. We crisscrossed all over the place during the, you know, late 90s.
Have you reconnected?
I've reached out to him, and whenever, you know, when he's been in town, we've gotten together. I've been able to try to come to shows. He's very busy.
Is it weird?
And I, you know, I've not done a good enough job. It is. It's like the, it's like those stories where, you know, they say, you know, two brothers separated.
Right, yeah.
One grew up and to own a bowling alley, and the other one is a bowling champion.
Yeah.
Well, they both went bowling? Why?
Yeah.
All right, so we both went rock music, lead guys in rock bands.
That's so weird.
It's very weird. So your question about me, yeah, that has always been kind of a thing for me.
Sure.
And I've realized that since I took that sabbatical. You know, I took about 6-7 years to kind of be family guy. And I was in a very unhappy place. Going through a separation at the time, living in my apartment, going, man, what, you know, what do I love? What are things that I love? I was really doing a self search,
yeah.
You know, within. I was like, man, I love music.
Yeah.
I love performing music.
Yeah.
I love being on stage. I miss getting up there. And Ben Mills was leaving a band at the time. We're having happy hour. And he's like, hey, what are you doing anyway? I was like, well, I've been thinking about getting back in. He goes, you know, me too. I've been thinking about getting back in. So you want to call some guys? And I was like, call some guys. Let's get together. He called some guys. We had a rehearsal, and boom, 333.
Do you get anxiety about stuff when you put it, like when you're putting it, because that every time I put a band together now, I'm like, oh, it's just like we're gonna break up, like everyone's gonna hate me. just
There's always those struggles.
Okay,
what I tried to, and there's always the one member screwing up.
Right.
It's even it's been me, you know. We all have that where somebody's not pulling their weight, and somebody. And I think with this group of guys, it's a lot like Push Monkey was, where we're brothers, right? We have a group of folks with 333 now that work very well together. We kind of get our own idiosyncrasies. We understand the attitudes that happen from time to time and a little interpersonal stuff, but. You know, for the most part, they're very livable.
Yeah.
The bad. And the good is really good. We write great tunes. We get along great. We play great shows. You know, it's a rare day when we go and play a club and don't get comments like, man, you guys are the best band tonight.
Cool.
Not from a...
No.
You know...
Look, I've seen you perform for over 20 years, man.
That's
you,
the feedback. Yeah. And I'm like, I know, it was really good. I had a good time.
Yeah. You know? You're one of those guys... And I mean, I'm not taking you out of the band. The band has magic too, but you definitely would surround yourself with other people that have that same kind of energy.
Yeah.
You know, you've always been a magnetic.
I appreciate that.
Person.
Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah. And this group of guys likes performing, you know, really interacting with the crowd, getting to know the fans. I mean, they come from the place of it's fun to play live.
Yeah.
Because. You know, early on, you're like, oh, we're going to have a record deal and make all this money and be successful. You know what? That may or may not happen. But when you're playing live and you're in front of a crowd, that's a wonderful little moment.
Yeah.
Let's enjoy that.
Yeah, you got to take the little things while you get them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you learn throughout life.
That's it. That sabbatical taught me that because I didn't have it for those many years. And I'm like, you know, I really miss playing to five people.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to play to five people. Sometimes you get to play to 500 people.
Yeah.
Right? But I even miss playing to five people.
Sure. Just miss playing. Or getting in the room with the guys.
Yeah.
And like just hammering something out.
Mm-hmm.
And getting if someone had an idea and then by the end of the thing, you have a song that...
That's amazing. You just
birthed there was something. Nothing. Now you put something in the world.
That's right.
That's the best, man.
Love it. You pull something out of the air and now it's alive. It's real.
Yeah.
That people like. They go, oh, wow, look at that. That's amazing. That said something to me. You're like, wow, we just pulled something out of the air.
Yeah.
That spoke and connected to a person.
So that's did you play in Houston? I mean, did you have a band or something?
No, I mean, I was in high school band, played trumpet.
That's where
the whole trumpet thing on stage came from, was a trumpet player. But I always composed. Like I remember my band director in Houston.
Where did you go to high school there?
Jersey Village High School. We had a really good dynamic band director. His name was Tim Cunningham. He's passed. Oh. But he was always encouraging, like, if you expressed any kind of interest in music, and I wanted to do more composition, you know, I had my staff paper, and I'm trying to figure out how do you write these notes out, and how do you actually create a melody on paper, and have someone actually play it back.
Yeah.
Right. So I had my staff music, and I'd write it all down and bring it to him, and he goes, well, you kind of messed up here, and that doesn't work, and this doesn't work, but you know,
you learned.
He would encourage.
Yeah.
A literal composition. So I thought I almost went to school to be a composer of music.
Well, what did you go to school for? Because you went to UT,
psychology,
right?
Yeah.
Psychology. Okay, yeah. So wow, did you graduate with a degree in that?
Mm-hmm.
During your sabbatical, were you practicing that? Or
psychology?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, not professionally. I practice it every day. I psychoanalyze everything to a fault.
Do you?
I do. Yeah, it's fun.
I do to myself. I've been in a lot of therapy over like the last, since 2001, like mm-hmm. pretty much constantly.
Yeah.
But I like a good therapist.
And yeah, me too.
I think it would be hard to be a therapist, psychologist, or psychiatrist. To be hard to leave that stuff behind.
I would think so too.
I mean, did you have, like, when you went to school for it, did you have any plan of becoming a...
No. I'm not even 100% sure, other than I found it fascinating. Like, you know, I think sure. I initially went to school for pre-med and was going to go that route.
Wow.
You know, biology. I had good grades in high school. I was a little bit of a good kid. And then as I started learning, I had to take a couple psychology classes. I was like, man, this is really interesting. These yeah. social aspects
yeah.
of how things work.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Up to the level of, and this is very off, in a way, you know, tangent, but there's even some fascinating science right now that talks about the human organism as a social being. Here's an example of how amazing the human, like ants in a way,
right,
are collectively. If you take a jar of jelly beans, right, and do the whole game where, you know, guess how many jelly beans are in the jar, right?
Right.
Maybe there's 4,000 jelly beans. 4,206 okay. is the number, right? And you ask any one person, how many jelly beans are in that jar? They'll say, 400. 8 million. That'll give you the weirdest,
yeah.
incorrect answers, right? But after a certain statistical number, maybe it's 1,000 or 2,000 of those guesses averaged out, they are like millionth degree accurate. They will,
wow,
the
really?
Answer of the average,
yeah,
the
yeah,
aggregate
yeah.
average,
yeah, that's weird.
Will be 4,204.
So
collectively, we're Rain Man. That's right. Exactly right. Collectively, we're Rain Man. To the point where, that's good. No, you got it. To the point where they're actually taking internet, you know, little pings, and it's becoming predictive. They can actually predict like natural disasters based on internet
that's
hits
insane.
And stuff. Because the collective creature can predict the future.
Wow.
But the individual can't. You have sort of special individuals that are good. You know what I mean? It's like cutting edge psychology stuff.
That
it's
has
fascinating.
A lot. That answers a lot of my sort of like, you had a very, in the most I've seen you in, I saw you in Mad Hatter, but with Push Monkey, I saw you for years. And I saw from the Black Cat to, I saw you guys open for Kiss in San Antonio to, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like I saw a lot of things, and you had a very crowd control kind of front man. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and you have to have some kind of idea of psychology. I mean, maybe you don't have to study it, but you have to have some kind of idea of the collective consciousness. You know what I mean? And how to control that.
There are some of the most powerful times I've felt on stage mm-hmm. has been when the crowd is giving it back.
Oh, yeah.
Right, it's when they're doing stuff without any direction.
Yeah,
like just like all of a sudden they start singing in tandem, all of them, back.
Right.
After the song's over, the same lyric.
Right.
That we just got done, or the same.
It's
part.
Amazing.
And you're all of a sudden you're like, wow, we all just hit synergy. Some yeah. kind of an interest. I don't know. That sounds existential, whatever. But it happens.
It's what it is.
It happens. Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. Yeah. So when did you start a band then? Here, like a real. rock and roll band? It was Mad Hatter?
Yeah, I was actually living in that co-op.
So I've just seen you from the beginning of your
thing.
Pretty
much, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I remember one of the bands, Pangender, was like one of the cool bands at the time. And yeah. Right, oh, that'd be cool to be like them.
That's so weird, man.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you were living there?
I live at 24. I think Pearl, didn't you guys play at Pearl Street Co-op? Or you played something. It was like bands like the time, you know, Mouth for Milligan, Sprawl.
Oh, yeah.
Retarded Elf.
Stick People. Yeah, we used to play. That was Malford's band then.
Yeah,
we did shows with them. And Water the Dog.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great band. Yeah, so man. What year did you move here?
Like 80? That was probably 88.
88?
Yeah, 87, 88.
And so then you started that band. Who was in that? Was Will in that band, or who was in that band?
Yeah, then? So at the time, so the only spot that kept changing with the Push Monkey Crew group was the drummer spot. Mm-hmm. Right, we kind of meandered and didn't have the right drummer until Darwin.
Right.
Darwin's fabulous.
What an amazingly
just intelligent talent.
Yeah.
He's so smart musically.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had initially Severin Garensway was the drummer. We parted with him. And then Roy Hernandez, who is now passed. Lynn Hernandez. You might actually know a lot.
I know Lynn Hernandez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So his brother, Roy.
Okay. I don't remember Roy, but I do remember Lynn.
Yeah. And family's always been in music, and they do a lot of stuff, you know, music business type stuff.
Yeah.
He was our drummer for a while, and then we parted with him. Then a guy named Rico Ibarra moved down from Seattle, and he was in the band for a while, released the first Push Monkey record, The Maze, that first one he played. And then we parted with him, like the day of the week of the release. So Darwin played the actual release show for that record, but it was Rico's playing.
Right.
And then from there on, it was always Darwin. And that was the five. Four Push Monkey guys. Like that five had the right, you know, the right weirdnesses that worked together.
Yeah. You know? It was a great, it was a really fun group of guys and just very nice group of people that you could really talk to and hang out with.
Sharp intelligent people. All five of us were, just really clear.
Are Pat's parents still around? I remember them always being around.
Great people.
Yeah. Nice people.
Ron and Cher, yeah.
Totally, man.
They still come to see shows and
do they?
Go out and yeah.
Do you guys? When was the last time you played? Because I know you played into the 2000s.
Yeah, we did reunion shows. I think we did one in maybe 2010, maybe 2011.
Oh, that's not that long ago.
We did the one show, which was I think we did a Danny Crooks reunion show, and then maybe the 2 years prior we did the Johnny Walker.
Oh yeah.
When he had a stroke.
Yeah.
Right, we did the thing to support him, and I think that's kind of started us doing the reunion. So every year or two, we would do a reunion show, but now we're just at a point where, when this last one they couldn't all do it. I think Will was on the road, Howie and Darwin wanted to do it but couldn't make it.
Does Howie live here?
He lives in Houston.
Okay, yeah. And Darwin lives in Houston. Yeah. And where does Pat live here?
I think he's in Bryan, College Station.
Wow, what does he do?
Lawyer.
Really?
Entertainment law.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, you need a good lawyer.
That's a weird place to be an entertainment lawyer. I mean, do you think he's the only guy there?
I think he comes to Austin.
Okay.
I haven't talked to Pat that much lately regarding kind of his practice, but I need to.
Yeah.
We keep meaning to get together, but.
It's weird, isn't
busy.
It? Hey, let me ask you this. How did you guys end up, you guys made a record with Mike Klink. I remember that because we were there when you guys were there making a record. And I remember hanging out one night. I can't remember if you were there or not, but I remember hanging out one night. And how was that working with a guy like that?
Well, I mean, when again, Mike Klink did Guns N' Roses, right? Their big Appetite record was his record. So it's funny how personable. And you think, oh, we're going to work with this big, amazing, badass producer. And he is. But he was so kind of a chameleon. Like, he was very much one of us. He wasn't very, pushy, demanding. He was very, subtle and cool in his perspectives. And he really brought out a lot of good things for that record. I tell you, and in a way, it was very effective, productive, but not overbearing. And he was really classy, very classy guy to work with.
I liked that record.
Yeah, me too.
A lot.
One of our, probably overall from a production and songwriting together, probably the best record we had.
Yeah. That's good that that happened then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'll
be honest.
3 records later.
Yeah. There was at one point, you know, I was singing in the studio and I was struggling with a part. And he was like, you know, Tony, I just want to, you know, I got this guy I want to bring you to. It was a vocal coach. Drove my butt over to a vocal coach and had like 3 lessons.
Totally changed your thing?
Totally. And I, to this day, I am a vocal coach now.
Oh, you are?
Many of those lessons I teach to my students from those 3.
Wow.
I learned more in those 3 than anything I ever learned before.
What do you teach in, like, is a lot of breathing and a lot of, what are people doing wrong?
Proper breathing, yeah, is a big deal.
That's the biggest, that's right? The lesson that I learned most.
Yep. Shaping of the mouth and where to place your head voice for guys is very difficult. You know, getting those high notes, very challenging, right? That's what everyone, oh, I can't hit those notes. Can't hit those notes. Can't consistently hit those notes. Well, because you're not placing it properly. It's not in the right part of your head. Right. And if you do that properly, right,
you'll nail it.
You'll hit it. I actually had Brandon Gibbs plays in a band around town. He's been around a little while. And he came to me. He's a student of mine. And he was going in the studio and he was like, man, I got this note, really high note. It was difficult for me to hit it, too. He's like, man, I really would love to hit that note. And I was like, well, let's work on it. Right. So I showed him some breathing things. I showed him where to place it. And I said, just do this every day. You've got about 2 or 3 weeks before you go in to do your take. Do this every day, and you have I can't guarantee you'll hit it, but you have a good shot, right? Wow. You'll best shot you'll have is if you do this every day. 3 days later, he texts me, Tony, I'm hitting that note consistently now.
That's awesome.
Thank you. I know.
That is awesome.
As rewarding, as so rewarding.
Yeah.
To have a student do that, be successful, and to watch him go nail that note. Well, I didn't watch him do it, but I know he went and nailed that note.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. I'm proud of him.
On those, when you toured, your voice was always really good. I mean, I remember your voice was, there was never like, I don't remember like an issue.
I mean.
Ever with you. I mean, like when we did the run when you guys had the bus and stuff yeah. And before we went to make our record.
I've always been blessed with a lot of stamina and I've always been blessed with a lot of range.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is work. It's hard work. You know, I studied. I took vocal lessons for, you know, 7-8 years. You know, I didn't.
Before that guy?
Mm-hmm. It's funny because his 3 would be more powerful. But all of it mattered, right?
Yeah.
It all helped.
Yeah.
But
it's just
I
funny that one guy's
huge,
just so badass. That
yeah. And like I think, like, he taught, like, he worked with Seal. He worked with Sting. Like, he worked with some
dudes that sing well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why Mike was like, you're going to see this guy. This is the guy.
Yeah. That's
you
incredible.
Need that guy. I was like, he was right. I needed that guy. What's crazy, though, is it jacked me up for the first 2 weeks after. It's like learning your golf. You have to relearn the golf swing.
Right, right.
Oh, man, I couldn't sing. I had to take a break from the studio and let guitars come in.
Yeah.
So y'all do overdubs because I don't know how to sing this song
anymore.
Where
did you guys work at Sunset or like one?
We did.
Guys worked at a place like that.
We did Rumbo.
Yeah.
Which was Captain and Tennille's studio. That was cool. I got to actually check out the white piano.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
That was so cool. And Guns and Axel,
Guns and Roses.
Axel was there doing his record.
Oh yeah,
I'll tell you a funny story about that too, in a minute. Then we went to Ocean,
yeah, Ocean,
and
Way.
Then we did 1 day at Ocean Way.
Okay,
right, because they've got Ocean and Ocean Way.
Oh, okay,
right.
Okay,
and so, I think
oh
that's
right.
Right,
yeah,
that's
because
right.
they had the same thing at Sunset. They had Sunset and Sunset Sound Recorders.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. You know, the one we spent the mixing time was Ocean, and that was off kind of by Melrose. Area.
Who mixed it? Same dude?
Carl Durfler, who did live. He did some Foo Fighters stuff. So, you know, really, really good mixer.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Mike oversaw everything.
Yeah.
So,
was
it was a cool record.
Yeah. Did you guys have, like, was it a smooth thing? Like, when you guys made the record? Because, like, I don't know how much you know about what happened to us. Like, we went there and made a record. And then when we started mixing it, we were like, oh, this is terrible. Then we threw it away and came back here and made a record with Mike McCarthy.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, Mike, man, I haven't talked to that guy in a long time.
Oh, he's doing good. He's got a nice studio over by next to Affordable Sound.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. I should reach out to him.
He still complains. It's unbelievable. It's an art form with that guy.
Right.
He's almost like a Woody Allen.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Exactly. That's awesome. No, I didn't know that about that with you guys. I thought, so it just, you had to kind of scrap it? Start over? That sucks.
It was real freaky. And like, wow. Like fired our managers and like.
I bet that was like a crazy sinking feeling.
It was real weird. It was like, wow, we did all this work. We did this thing. And then we made this record that, like, literally, like, one night, I called Lars, like, on the phone. I wasn't ever supposed to talk to him without talking through the managers. And I was like, have you been listening? He's like, yeah. He's like, I don't like this album. What can we do to fix this? And then it was like sending that to a bunch of mixing guys to see if they could do a better job than the guy that we had hired.
Right.
And it was fucked up. And we found out later that the dude's, you know, girlfriend was like a junkie, and she was like kind of constantly calling and interrupting sessions and, you know, like those kind of right. weird things personal. Where you're like, would have been better
yeah.
to know that going into it. Because yeah. we just thought everything was shitty. So, but anyway, yeah, that was weird. Yeah. So we ended up making the record and then having Jack Joseph Puig mix it. But he did it at Ocean Life.
Jack Joseph is fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was fabulous. Anyway, so I was going to ask you one more question about that time. I didn't know that you guys played Woodstock 99.
Yeah, we started the fires. That was our fault. Yeah, we
but
never.
None of you were raped.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
That's not funny.
You mean, well, we raped each other. Yeah. But... That was always.
I was on your bus.
You know,
I know what went on there. You guys had like queso and hot man sex.
Queso, Vaseline, and men.
So when did you play? Like, what day of it did you play? Like, how dark was the scene?
Oh my lord, that was like apocalyptic. It was weird. You know, like Walking Dead. That's basically what Woodstock was—the first Walking Dead.
Yeah,
yeah. I think they filmed a lot of it and just used the footage.
I remember watching it on TV and then seeing all that stuff and just being like,
"Oh my god!" We did Ozfest, we did some big festivals,
yeah,
and it was, you saw some crazy thing. I saw some crazy thing, but Lord, Woodstock. I mean, I saw women shitting on pizza boxes. I saw naked people walking around that shouldn't be naked. I mean, and I'm not judgmental. I'm like, be yourself. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. I've been to Hippie Hollow before. Be yourself. Keep it weird. I'm good.
I've seen old naked people.
Right. But damn. And I mean, the word is capital D, damn.
Can I throw this out?
I mean, people puking on other people in the rain. So it was romantic.
I remember playing a show with you guys in some weird place like San Angelo or somewhere like that when your record had just come out and stuff. And we were opening for you, and there was a weird biker kind of crowd, like a West Texas speed freak crowd. And there was an older man, older lady.
I remember that show. A&R,
like another person.
Yeah.
Well, A&R and I couldn't stop talking because we met the weirdest people, and A&R and I just fully engulfed ourselves into their lives. But it all started with this couple that was sitting in front of the stage, and the lady, like, she leaned over and asked her old man something, and then he was like, oh yeah, sure, go ahead. And then she like flashed us, and she was like 50, and then like there was like
well, it's a good thing she got approval first.
There was like 15 people. Well, what happened was like the manager came out from behind the bar and was like, hey, you can't do that here. I remember it was in between songs that he was yelling at, and the guy was like, hey man, my old lady just wants to let them know they're cool. I was like, that is so awesome.
I mean,
so yeah, I bet you went on to see a lot of
there is
stuff.
No greater endorsement
yeah.
than a boob flash on stage.
No.
I think that you know you've done it when you see the nips.
I saw by default. It was not shown to me directly.
Right.
But
at
a wedding that Skyrocket played a few years ago, this lady was just going for broke with our singer Benjamin, and she just ran up and just lifted up her skirt and showed the coochie and was like, what do you think? Like literally said, what do you think? But I saw it. I got to see it over from the
approved.
Side. Yeah. What does that mean when people do, like, that means, hey, this band is good. It was not approved. It was not street legal.
Right.
There was a lot of bad things happening there.
That's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. It's a funny business. That's why I'm like to be back on stage.
But it doesn't happen as much anymore.
No.
It doesn't happen when you're old.
Right?
It doesn't happen. I mean, that stuff used to happen in the time. Maybe this Mr. Rockababy reunion we'll get to
now,
see
you
some
know,
stuff.
I think the chances are high. It's going to be fun. That's going to be really fun.
So 333, you've got a show coming up October 24th. It's a dress-up party at Hanover's. Who else is on the bill?
Yep. Oh, crap. You would ask me that. Let me think.
Well, we know 333 is on the bill.
You know, you mentioned Dana. I think Stonecracker might be on that bill.
That's her band?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a great one.
Do we have our internets available? I can get the list. We can edit that in.
Sure.
Let me see. All
right. You got two phones?
I have a, yeah. I'm wild like that.
That is wild. Is that a voice? There's like a voice, a phone for voice people, and then
no,
the Tony Park rock star?
There's the Tony Park rock star, and there's a Tony Park work star.
Oh, what do you work at?
I work at Applied Materials. I'm a project manager, lead. For
That's amazing.
Purchasing. I get stuff and have my team get stuff.
And they're cool with you being a rock guy?
Yeah, yeah. It's that's a cool company.
Yeah.
Like they're.
I see their name everywhere.
Yeah. So, yeah, nobody understands what they do.
No, but I do know what when you say Applied Materials, I'm like, that's a place. And you're also doing something in November.
That's a place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there, there's the a place called BFE. I'm good at that. Yeah. And you're doing that with Podunk?
Yeah.
That's from my memory.
That's amazing. Yeah. See, I have to use the internets.
Yeah. I like the use of internets on my show. The interwebs is there.
The interwebs and the internets. I'm sorry. I'm trying to look up the bands that are going to, because I know there's a lot of cool bands. It's going to be a really fun night, October 24th at the Mighty Hanovers in Pflugerville.
I like Hanovers.
Man, we love playing there. Yeah, in fact, I
Scott Rocket has played there.
Probably 2 years ago or something, I went up there and you guys just got off the stage. I was like, damn it. I was looking for you. I was going to say hi.
You know, I want to tell you something that I thought was nice. I'll say it on the record. You wrote me after one of those things aired about my mom's trial, and you wrote me a really nice note.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that.
You're absolutely welcome. My heart goes out to you. I was like, wow.
It's
amazing
so
to be going
weird.
Through that and just, yeah.
It's what you, you know, man, we all have to do, we all have a weird thing handed to us.
Yeah, everyone has.
Everyone does, yeah. Everyone has the worst thing that ever happened to them.
That's right. Well said.
You know?
Yeah,
that's even
I'm
going to
use that
like,
in a
like
song.
Shit on by a bird or something.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, use that in a song.
I might.
Hey, with your songwriting thing, yeah,
that's right. You're in the room. It counts.
I am in the room. I get at least 5%.
How does it work? I'm trying to get in there. I'm still looking.
You know what? I can talk about it in the intro.
Okay, that works.
Yeah,
that's much.
And
easier.
That way, people will hear it at the top of the show.
Yeah, I said Facebooks.
Yeah, Facebooks.
Yeah. You got to pluralize. Twitters. I got a Twitters.
Do you Instagram?
Instagrams? Nah.
No.
you know, I'm not on there, but I see the little pictures on Facebook so I know I should do that. Mm-hmm. Is it good? Everyone does it though now.
I like it.
I run out of bandwidth for social media though.
I'm tough.
Like, I got this one, I got that one, I got this.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A lot of stuff.
Man.
I really do use it though to book guests. Like I saw you on there and I was like, oh yeah, I should get Tony to come in.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm glad you did. And there was something else I was going to say to you right now. I'm glad that you took a sabbatical and cleared your head and came back.
Man, I love being back. 333 is a great band. A lot of fun.
It's a great band.
The Things That Break, really cool record.
Yeah.
Right? It's got
great job.
The first four songs are electric rock songs,
yeah.
And the next four are those eco mixes, which some of the eco mixes are actually songs that were hard on the first record.
Oh, right.
So we revamped them. And so for folks that know those songs live, they get to hear a little bit of a new take.
Do you do those songs in that style when you do a show normally, or do you have eco shows?
No, but we're planning an eco show.
Okay.
And we've got a couple of folks around town. In fact, I could use your help connecting up.
Sure.
But we want to bring in other musicians, violinists, keyboardists, some people that might play on that eco show with natural instruments.
That would be awesome.
You know, and do like a theater in the round. We've actually talked with Eddie at Hanover's to maybe set it up in the middle.
Yeah.
And do it where everyone gathers around and it's very organic, very, eco.
Yeah. I hope that Hanover's and the Roost can work in conjunction with each other, creating a scene in North Austin for people.
Yeah.
I've experienced no weirdness from either one about either one.
Same.
But you can feel how it's tough to get something going. It's tough
it
to
is.
Get something going in a place where a lot of stuff isn't really going on like that.
Right.
So I wish the best. You guys are going to play there? Or did you say?
We haven't played the Roost. I talked to Dave Cotton probably about once every couple weeks. He'll try and throw a show our way. And so far we haven't been able to make it work. But and then Eddie has been so good. We have a little bit of a loyalty.
He's very,
right to him.
Yeah.
And well, not a little bit. We do have a loyalty to him. So yeah, I've kind of talked with Dave Cotton about it. Dave, if you're listening,
it's
you know, for the right show, we can do it, right?
Yeah.
Because that'll make sense. But what's difficult is for us to headline at the Roost, because we have our once a month headline at the at Hanover.
Right.
So.
And you're doing it. You're not going to do a weekly thing, because no one really goes to see a rock band every week. And what are you going to do?
It's funny.
Every
residencies,
week to do that?
Residents, they do work, and they said that back then too. You know, when we were at the Black Cat.
Yeah.
We were a rock band. And
what was your night? Like Wednesday or something?
Tuesdays.
Tuesdays.
Yeah. And actually, at first, we did Tuesdays and Fridays. We played two nights a week.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, Paul Sessoms. Yeah, he took a chance. He's like, you know, we can do this. Joe Rock had worked, right? And they were a little more rock,
and Sunflower
too.
Did it for a while. Mm-hmm. They did
two-day
a week.
They opened up for us on one of our nights.
All right.
Right. So we kind of helped them get their start. But that's how that residency thing worked, right? You did your night, and every Tuesday, even if it was a Tuesday, free hot dogs, free, you know, dollar beers, free hot dogs, go see that band every Tuesday. You got to where it became a habit.
Yeah.
That's the idea. It was a habit. That's what we do on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
And sure enough, that builds and builds and builds.
Oh, yeah. It's so, it was, that was a good, that was a magical time for that kind of thing.
Very much so. And I don't know that it would work now.
No.
Because there's so much distraction. You know, back then, a lot of college kids at UT would be doing nothing on a Tuesday night. So they'd go to the Black Cat. Right. Yeah.
And it was such a big part of the culture. Like we were people that people knew.
Right.
You know what I mean? A lot more than now.
Oh, yeah. Like the co-op scene. We all hung.
Yeah. Right. And like, you know, people like at the grocery store, you know, they'd know it was you. They'd know it was me, you know.
Right. Right.
And it was, I guess that still happens, but it's different. It's a lot different. You know, I think of you as family.
Yeah.
Even though we don't hang out at all. Like there's
we
so,
can change
it's
that.
Weird. We, yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd love to. I've known you for 35 million years.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe
it's been a
trillion
long time.
Years.
It's been a long time. I'm really happy that you're out there playing. And,
I'm glad you're still out there, too.
Yeah.
In fact, do you guys, hey, does Skyrocket do Rio?
By Duran Duran?
Uh-huh.
No.
Learn it.
We should.
I play trumpet.
Do you? Oh.
I play the saxophone solo with trumpet.
Oh, yeah.
We do it in 333, but we do it less and less now. But it's really cool. I did it once with Suede as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, we should do that song.
It's fun. It is so fun.
What did we do? We did Girls on Film. That was it.
Well, let me know. I'm a big, I love Duran Duran.
So. Me too.
I'm an
80s. How do you find music now? Like, what do you use to listen to music?
It's funny because I still, friends and family and folks that, you know, colleagues, they go, hey, found this cool band I think that you would like.
Yeah.
Right? And sure enough, I'm like, oh, that's, I like that.
Yeah.
I do like... I still love we all grew up in the 80s, right? So I love that 80s, 90s stuff still. So I listen to that from time to time. It's funny how as you age, your playlist sort of solidifies, right? And it's hard. Most people don't go and seek new music. I do try to.
Good.
I always try to check out, like, we have a policy and a philosophy in 333 where, you know, when we're playing a show with five other bands, you're supposed to be there at 9.
No, oh, yeah.
You know, we don't do that whole... Now, sometimes... Especially, you know, with me with my singer disease, I sometimes have to show up late.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we all get there and we watch all the bands. We show support. We stand up in the front and
that's,
you know,
good.
Try to see what's going on with the band, because you find great little bands.
Yeah.
You know, every so often you're like, wow, that band's great.
Yeah.
You know, in a way, if we set an energy towards giving it back, we hope to generate maybe a little bit of that reciprocity.
Yeah.
In the world, whether it works or not. Why not go? You're there anyway. Have some drinks. Watch a cool band.
Yeah.
Then to go play a great show.
Tony Part from 333. A nice guy. Talented guy. Old friend.
Old friend.
Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Absolutely.
All right. It's great. All right. Tony Park from 333, man, what a great band. That's a song from their album, The Things That Break. You can find them at 333music.com. That's 3 spelled out, so it's T-H-R-E-E, 33music.com. Get out there, support them, man. It was great reconnecting with him. It's great to talk and came out to the show, see Skyrocket that night at Hanover's. We're talking about going and getting some dinner. Great time, great artist, great band, and a nice conversation, man. It's great talking to him. Great catching up, hearing old names, and finding out what's going on with the old Push Monkey guys, who I cared about very much. Those guys were always very nice to me and my band, okay? So get out there and support 333. And while you're out there on the internet looking up 333, do not forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. We are also available on Stitcher. You can like our Facebook page, which is called How Did I Get Here? You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Let's get into some more 333 music, huh? All right, let's get down.
When I can't go, 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 go.